right then. Wednesday, 5 p.m. Time for American Hit Radio, 90.3, WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City. I'm Tom Ryan, your host for an hour, if you'll let me, if you can hang out a little bit. My wife and co-host, Heidi Morales, running the board and taking care of all the details in the background, freeing me up to talk as I want to. Now, if you're a regular listener, you know what we do on Wednesdays. We've been pushing albums for quite a while now. We've been doing it for the better part of 10 years. You got another 10 to go to finish our list. We've got 1,000 albums that we've intended to play. 500 of them are albums that we call the top 500 of the top 40, meaning they were hit albums. And then I chose another 500 deliberately that were not hit albums, just to be sure that I was going to get, go deep. Actually, we did it the other way around in the beginning. We were going to do just the alternative when I realized that it would have been a good idea to play some popular albums as well. So that's what we've been doing. And we started with albums from the year 1955 and moving our way up toward the present. When I started the list, that was 10 years ago. So now I've got 10 more years of stuff to cover, actually, as we move along. We'll see what happens when we get toward the end. It's going to get a little bit weird, I think. But right now, we've moved up a total of 21 years. From 1955, we are in the middle of the year 1976. So the albums that we are covering for the next few weeks are all going to be albums that are celebrating their 50th anniversary this year. That's kind of freaky to me to think that that much time could have passed. Now, the album that we're going to cover did not chart in America, not at all. It was released in July of 1976. The name of the album is Howlin' Wind. The artist is Graham Parker and The Rumor. I became a really big fan of Graham Parker and The Rumor in the late 70s. They were right there at the cusp of like when punk rock was starting to happen, and they were not quite punk, but they certainly were edgy, and they were able to get kind of close to that. And their later albums certainly had that edge. The earlier albums, like this album that we're going to cover, Howlin' Wind, is the band's first album. And they were coming out of a scene in England that was called the British pub rock scene. So the British pub scene of the mid-70s marked an awkward time for the English music scene, due to the rise in prominence of art rock and, of course, glam and all that. The country was overwhelmed with hyper-inflated bands performing near Herculean feats not to be attempted by mere mortals. Queen, Genesis, King Crimson, Yes, 10cc and their ilk, all that, those type of bands, they were all making music that was either impossible or nearly impossible for listeners to emulate or for another musician to even try to cover it. At this point in time, the fans' job was to stand in awe of the masters who perfected their craft and took the time to do it, whether it took months or sometimes almost half a year to create an album. At this point, well, I said about the fan, while these acts utilized recording studios to create sonic masterpieces, the rest of us became mere observers, at least the rest of what was going on in England. Gone were the days when kids were inspired by rhythm and blues records or their skiffle forebears, like the Beatles were. In 1975, such an anachronism became quaint and embarrassingly naive. By then, everybody knew that you needed to go to art school if you wanted to be a rock star, and you needed to learn to play your instrument cleaner, faster, harder, louder than any other human being. Multi-tracking suggested the possibility of perfection, so records started to take months to complete instead of days. End products were mixed and mastered by professionals who envisioned a brave new world of uber artists controlling the music industry. Pity the poor kids who lived through that. Before all of this quote-unquote artistry, a fan could have learned just a few chords and faked their way through a tune or two. Now, you had to count on your chos just to find out what the time signature was. A reckoning was bound to happen, but it started out modestly. Those who couldn't keep up with the music gods decided to fend for themselves, playing in pubs to an audience that craved something direct and comprehensible. The rhythms were direct, almost always in 4/4 time, and the chord patterns were built around sturdy melodies. While the rock and roll gods sang fantastical fictions about their time spent in outer space or something like that, the pub rockers sang about making enough money to buy a pint or a girl that they fancied. Pub rock started out slowly because everyone considered it too simple for serious consideration. But after a while, a few people grew tired of hearing nonsensical syllabics, feigning better-than-thou poetics, sung over pristine orchestral arrangements. This is the time when those days go away, pretty much. My God, does anybody remember laughter? I mean, how about dancing? Lord knows that Britain certainly had a lot of pubs. So while rock stars vied for theaters, maybe even stadiums, the more plebeian bands took to the bars. Dr. Feelgood, Ducks Deluxe, Brinsley Schwartz, which at the time included Nick Lowe, Eddie and the Hot Rods, and some unknown guy named Joe Strummer, who was in a band called the 101ers, all played the circuit. Because these bands relied heavily on the energy of their live performance, most studio albums failed to have an impact, and the scene splintered. But not before establishing the basic tenets for Britain's punk rock scene. Graham Parker was a working-class kid who still loved old R&B and wanted to perform with the energy of the pub rockers, but also with the nuance of American soul music. While the scene fell apart around his head, Parker found support from a manager named Dave Robinson, who was working from a tiny office above Pub Rock's Valhalla, the Hope and Anchor pub, which was actually absolute, like, front and center, most important spot of anything that had to do with pub rock. That was the pub, really, of the time. So Dave Robinson grabbed a few members from the band Brinsley Schwartz, another one of the pub rock bands, and a few more from a band called Ducks Deluxe, to form a backing band for Graham Parker called The Rumor. Parker provided original songs and a rough vocal style that sounded like sort of like a British working class version of Otis Redding. From years of pub work, the musicians were sharp and disciplined, capable of a variety of styles that fell together remarkably well. The resulting album, Howlin' Wind, was nuanced and eclectic. Parker filled expectations as rock and roll's new angry young man, but the band played like an ensemble, with an attention to detail rivaling American acts like Little Feat or The Band. Seemingly out of nowhere, Graham Parker and The Rumor sounded ready to take on rock's mainstream. But then punk rock exploded onto the scene and totally killed that idea. So Graham Parker was suffering for pretty much his entire career for not being in the right place at the right time. But that doesn't take anything away from how great this album actually is. So let's get this thing moving. Here's the opening track from the album, Howlin' Wind. Opening song is called White Honey.
Wake up early. A little sweet white honeybee. Tastes so good that a whole town stood and stared and looked at me.
White honey. Is it a drug reference? I can't say for sure because the lyrics don't make that to be perfectly clear at all. Not at all. See, Graham Parker was one of those, one of the Britain's angry young men, one of a not particularly big guy with a chip on his shoulder. He was a gas station attendant. He pumped petrol before he got signed by a record label, Mercury, who signed him. And even then, the reason that happened is, you know, Mercury and a couple of other labels were kind of like looking for bands that they knew that they could like lowball a little bit. The pub rock scene was not considered to be something that was going to sell anywhere near what the classic rockers were selling. There, you'd have to if you were like Queen or Led Zeppelin or whatever, you know that you're going to hit that 250,000 mark easy if you're that popular. And even if you're a band that's maybe not quite that popular, but still doing reasonably well, like a 10cc or Genesis or King Crimson, you're probably going to get close to that number. But with the pub rockers, you'd maybe if you could get 20,000 albums sold, you're covered. You're good. So bands like Mercury would fear that they're not taking a big risk if they find somebody like Graham Parker and they get him with the fantastic band. I was putting together the band that they got, partly from Brinsley Schwartz, which was the band that Nick Lowe was a member of. They pulled out the keyboard player Bob Andrews and the guitarist, whose name was Brinsley Schwartz. So that he just left and he became Graham Parker's guitar player. And the other half of the band, as I think I mentioned, was Dux Deluxe, and that's where the other guys came from. So these two bands with a lot of experience were able to make albums that sounded incredibly professional. This is pre-punk, quite obviously. But it's also doing a lot toward setting the table for punk rock. Exactly like was going. I mean, as I mentioned, people like Paul Strummer were on the scene in a band called 101ers playing in the exact same pubs, doing the exact same thing. Graham Parker only missed the pub rock thing because he got signed around this time. So he was already a bit of a step ahead of everybody else. But it was his manager that was living above the pub rock that thought of this whole thing and put it all together in the first place. All right, so we'll keep moving. Got a 12 songs on this album, which is a nice amount. And it's and they're all, there's a lot of stuff that you got to hear that you're probably going to recognize. This might not be one of them, though. Maybe. I don't know. It's called Nothing's Gonna Pull Us Apart.
Hey, hey.
played two of them back to back for you on this one. Because like Heidi points out to me, which correctly, that if I talk too much, I might not be able to get the whole album in. So we heard Nothing's Gonna Pull Us Apart, and that segued into Silly Thing. And I want to make just one more mention about the year 1976. We've been on it for a while now, and I keep talking about how it was a transitional year. This is even more proof that 1976 was maybe the most transitional year for music since 1955 with the birth of rock and roll. There are so many different things that are beginning to happen in 76 with things changing, the scenes changing all over the place, setting up for punk rock and the end of certain other styles of music. It was all happening all at once, it seemed, in 1976. There was a bit of a mess then, too, because it was hard to even be aware of what was going on. And the good stuff was still obscure. This album was not very well known. As I said, it did not even make the top 200 on the American music charts, on the Billboard charts. So this wasn't really at all a seller. You'd have to listen to certain FM radio stations that were playing, you know, album rock. I know WNEW would occasionally play a little bit of Graham Parker in 1976. By the end of the decade, they were playing him quite a bit. He was one of their darlings. But let's play a couple more. We'll play two more back to back. First up is a song called Gypsy Blood. And we'll let that segue into a really pretty quick song, though, called Between You and Me.
A red hot gypsy blood. All I saw while it flashed in my head, yeah. And that's all that's left between you and me, oh yeah. Say that's all that's left between you and me. Next thing I knew, I was being carried out to sea. Somebody whispering, hey, what is wrong with me? And that's all that's left between you and me. Yeah, 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 yeah. Say that's all that's left between you and me.
For that, Gypsy Blood. WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York is the station. I'm Tom Ryan. The show is American Hit Radio. Wanted to talk about that song that we just played a little bit because it's the oldest song on the album. It was actually recorded a full year before the album, the rest of the album was recorded. Graham Parker at that point in time in 1975 was trying hard to see if he could get involved with a record label, and he was recording his own songs and sending them out as demos to people and radio stations, hoping that he would get just a little taste of something, just, you know, to get his foot in the door. One of the guys that was that he would send it to would be a guy named Dave Robinson. He's the guy that's responsible for starting Stiff Records. Now, Stiff took most of their artists from the pub rock scene. If you think about it, Ian Dury and folks like that, Nick Lowe, they were all big, you know, big people in a very, very little pond, because the pub rock scene wasn't really that big. But Stiff Records knew that if they got these guys and they put them together, they wouldn't need to sell a lot of records because they were working on a really low budget. So it could have worked for Graham Parsons, Graham Parker. The song that we just heard, Between You and Me, he recorded that in 1975, but when the band came together to record for the album, they went to redo it. Figured they could update it, but Graham Parker actually said that he didn't like the rework versions. He liked the original one the best, so he kept that. So what he said is, like, subsequent recordings of the song did not match the feel of the original, so here it is. So that's that. Now, the last song on side one is one of the cooler rocker. This is why everybody was calling Graham Parker an angry young man, where he basically talks about how basically school was hell. And it's this thing, they tell you that it was like a film out here, but it's a real horror show, boys. You'll hear it for yourself. This song is, I love this song. This is one of the ones that you might have heard a little bit of airplay, because it did get a decent amount for a couple of years. It's called Back to School Days.
Let me let it
for anybody who wants to keep track or to keep score. For that guitar player on that track was Dave Edmonds of Rockpile, or Dave Edmonds of Dave Edmonds. You know, he's pretty popular on his own, I think, as well. Another guy that came more or less out of the pub rock scene, more or less, to an extent anyway. About the same time as Graham Parker, though, because they were both coming out as it was ending. Now we'll play side two. We'll play two tracks back to back. Again, another rocker that you might recognize is the first one up. It's called Soul Shoes. And the same with the next one. The follow-up to that is a song called Lady Doctor. Go see you.
just down the road. You go in when you're moaning, I come out with just a heavy cold. So I'm giving no jargon, no medical how do you do. Well, just get right down on that stethoscope, baby, that'll be enough medicine for you. Yeah. I got a lady doctor, she cured the pain for free. I got a lady doctor, man, there ain't nothing wrong with me.
Interest of time, the next two tracks are going to play are You've Got to Be Kidding, because I'm running out of time, and the title track, Howlin' Wind. Just enough time to break in the last two tracks. Not If It Pleases Me will be the first one up. And then the ending song, which is a rockin' reggae tune called Don't Ask Me Questions. Thanks, folks. Hope you dug Grant Parker as much as I have been for the past 50 years.
I should stumble down the street, pay no attention, just jump my feet, yeah. You can't stop me, not if it pleases me. And if I should steal your only girl child, don't you worry, mama, just drive away. Can't stop me, not if it pleases me.
Thanks again. See you next.